Thank you. 102 WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM, Pennsylvania, United States, North America, the world.
Thank you. Pittsburgh Glass Center features Glass Lifeforms 2025, an exhibit of 50 glass biological models of flora and fauna depicting everything from animals and insects to plants and microorganisms, and created using diverse glass techniques such as stained glass, fusing, kiln casting, pot de verre, blown glass, flame working, and more, on display now through April 20th. The Pittsburgh Glass Center is located at 5472 Penn Avenue. Visit pittsburghglasscenter.org for more information about upcoming events.
Let's let this ride for a sec. The Harris Theater presents Oscar-nominated short films now through March 6th. Liza, a truly terrific, absolutely true story, a film about Liza Minnelli after the tragic death of her mother, Judy Garland. Liza brings into focus the dazzling, complex period of Minnelli's life as she confronts a range of personal and professional challenges on the way to becoming a bona fide legend. Showing March 7th through 13th. The Harris Theater is located at 809 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Visit trustarts.org/film for more information about upcoming films. That was the radio calendar. The WRCT radio calendar is heard daily at 1 p.m., 7 p.m., and, of course, 11 p.m. If you or your organization has an event to include in the WRCT radio calendar, please send it at least 2 weeks in advance to radio-calendar@wrct.org. Music calendar coming up in after this crescendo. This is the music calendar where we recommend, we don't recommend, we just inform you about random events happening in the Pittsburgh area. For example, you can see Buff Chick with Peter Grupp, Lem, and Shea Park at the Funhouse of Mr. Smalls tomorrow at 8 p.m.
You could also see Barefaced, Saboteur, Concrete Teeth, and Brutal Truth at the Roboto Project at 7 p.m.
Also on Friday, you could also... Maybe if your Friday's already booked up, Saturday at Stage AE at 7 p.m. you can see Ashley Cook with Graylin James, or maybe at 8 p.m. at Thunderbird if you want a really packed night and not see full of both shows, you see Beatles versus Dead, Eleanor, Walrus, and Fungus. That's at Thunderbird at 8 p.m. Saturday. Thank you.
pari solo a quant'altre d'intorno, d'intorno mi vedo, del mio cuore l'impero non cedo, meglio ad una che d'altra beltà, la costor avvenenza e qual dono di che il fato infiora la vita. Soggi questa mi torna gradita, forse l'altra, forse l'altra, dovallo sarà un'altra, forse l'altra, dovallo sarà. La costanza tiranna del cuore, detestiamo quel morbo crudele, so che vuole, si serve fedele, non d'amore se non è libertà, dei mariti il geloso furore, e degli amanti le smanie, e del rido, ancor d'argo i cent'occhi di sfido, se mi punge, una qualche metà a sé. Qualche metà. Sempre un amabile legge addroviso, in pianto in riso e menzognero. La donna immobile, qual più malvento, muta l'accento, vedi pensier, vedi pensier. È sempre misero chi a lei s'affida, chi le confida, malcata il cuore, pur mai non sentesi felice appieno, chi su quel seno non vibba amore. La donna immobile, qual più malvento, muta l'accento, vedi pensier, vedi pensier,
Hey!
RCT is supported by Tartan Inc. Tartan Inc. is a full-service copy and print shop located in the University Cullen Center on the Carnegie Mellon University campus. Services provided by the Copy Center include black and white and color copies, single and double-sided copying, and an assortment of colored and textured papers, including cover stock, specialty papers such as gloss paper, resume-quality paper, and large-format poster paper. They also offer binding and finishing options that include cutting, lamination, folding, tatting, stapling, collating, and comb, thermal, and coil binding. Tartan Inc. is also an authorized ship and drop-off site for UPS shipping. For more information, visit their website at cmu.edu/tartaninc or call 412-268-4828. If you want to call WRCT, you can call 412-268-9728. That's 412-CMU-WRCT. But if you're interested in just underwriting for WRCT, you know, that's casual, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. You're still listening to Classical on WRCT. If you're interested in what you've been hearing during this show, you can go to spinatron.com, look up our station, WRCT, or just go to WRCT.org and click somewhere in the top right. And now we will leave you with this. To get the most out of your medications, you need to know what's in them. Today, nearly everyone uses prescription or over-the-counter medications, but it's so easy to pick them up and buy them that consumers are lulled into thinking they pose no risks. Medicines are powerful and should be treated with respect. You must know how to use them safely. Studies show that consumers who have a relationship with their pharmacist know more about the medications they take and have a clear relationship with their and have a clear understanding of how to use them. The best way to establish a relationship starts with one easy step: learn their name. Have a list of questions ready when you pick up that prescription. You'll want to know when and how to take the medicine, how it should be stored, and whether any foods or activities should be avoided while you're taking the prescription. To know your medicine, know your pharmacist. A public service message from the American Pharmacists Association. This is WRCT. sleepy time tea with chamomile today, or tonight, I should say. We are reading Jack and the Beanstalk. Let me get comfortable first and have a sip of water, but you've just heard an hour of classical music for Record Roulette, which is always exciting. I love Record Roulette. It's the time in which I get to be a little bit more spontaneous and grab random things from the record library, but we're doing the opposite of spontaneity here, which is reading from a pre-written passage. I still hope you enjoy, though. I mean, I'm in it for the love of the game, so. This is Jack and the Beanstalk, collected by Joseph Jacobs. I'm not sure this has an original author that is available, but that's okay. There was, once upon a time, a poor widow who had a son named Jack and a cow named Milky White, and all they had to live on was the milk the cow gave every morning, which they carried to the market and sold. But one morning, Milky White gave no milk, and they didn't know what to do. "What shall we do? What shall we do?" said the widow, wringing her hands. "We must sell Milky White, and with the money do something, start a shop or something." "All right, Mother," says Jax. "It's market day today, and I'll soon sell Milky White, and then we'll see what we can do." So he took the cow's halter in his hand, and off he starts. He hadn't gone far when he met a funny-looking old man who said to him, "Good morning, Jack." Simply avoiding the sound of a door closing. But, "Good morning to you," said Jack, and wondered how he knew his name. "Well, Jack, and where are you off to?" said the man. "I'm going to market to sell our cow." "Well, that's good news for me," said the man. "I am in need of a cow, and this one looks good enough." The man pulled a number of strange-looking beans out of his bag. "I'll give you these 5 beans for your cow." "Ha," says Jack, "wouldn't you like that?" "Ah, you don't know what these beans are," said the man. "If you plant them overnight, by morning they grow right up to the sky." "Really?" says Jack. "Yes, and if it doesn't turn out to be true, you can have your cow back." "Right," says Jack, and hands him over Milky White's halter and pockets the beans. Back goes Jack home. "Back already, Jack," said his mother. "I see you haven't got Milky White, so you've sold her. How much did you get for her?" "You'll never guess, Mother," says Jack. "Good boy. 5 pounds? 10? 15? No, it can't be 20. I told you couldn't guess. Here, Mother, these beans were what I got. They're magical. Plant them overnight and..." "What?" says Jack's mother. "Have you been such a fool? Such a dolt? Such an idiot? To give away my Milky White, the best milker in the county, for a set of paltry beans? Take that, and that, and take that. And as for your precious beans, here they go out of the window. And now off with you to bed. No dinner for you tonight." So Jack went upstairs to his little room in the attic, and sad and sorry he was, to be sure, as much for his mother's sake as for the loss of his supper. At last he dropped off to sleep. When he woke up, the room looked so funny. The sun was shining into part of it, and yet all the rest was quite dark and shady. So Jack jumped up and dressed himself and went to the window. And what do you think he saw? Why, the beans his mother had thrown out the window into the garden had sprung up into a big beanstalk, which went up and up and up till it reached the sky. So the man spoke truth, after all. The beanstalk grew up quite close past Jack's window, so all he had to do was open it and give a jump onto the beanstalk, which was like a big braided ladder. So Jack climbed, and he 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 climbed, till at last he reached the sky. And when he got there, he found a long, broad road going as straight as an arrow. So he walked along, and he walked along, and he walked along, till he came up to a great big tall house, and on the doorstep there is a great big tall woman. "Good morning," says Jack, quite politely. "Would you be so kind as to give me some breakfast?" For he had nothing to eat, you know, the night before, and was as hungry as a hunter. "It's breakfast you want, is it?" says the great big tall woman. "It's breakfast you'll be if you don't move along. My husband is a giant, and there's nothing he likes better than little boys broiled on toast. You'd better be moving on, or you'll soon be coming." "Oh, please, do give me something to eat. I've had nothing to eat since yesterday morning, really and truly," says Jack. "I may as well be broiled as die of hunger." Well, the giant's wife wasn't so bad after all. She took Jack into the kitchen and gave him a piece of bread and cheese and a jug of milk. But Jack hadn't half finished these when... That was thump, thump, thump with the table, but... The whole house began to tremble with the noise of someone coming. "Good gracious me, it's my husband," said the giant's wife. "What on earth shall I do? Here, come quick and jump in here." She hurried Jack into the oven just as the giant came in. He was a big one, to be sure. At his belt, he had three cows strung up by the heels, and he unhooked them and threw them down on the table and said, "Here, wife, broil me a couple of these for breakfast." "Ah, oh, what's this I smell?" "Fee, fi, fo, fum. I smell the blood of an Englishman. Be he alive or be he dead, I'll have his bones to grind my bread." Nonsense, dear," said his wife. "You're dreaming, or perhaps you smell the scraps of that little boy you liked so much for yesterday's dinner. Here, go you and have a wash and tidy up, and by the time you come back, your breakfast will be ready for you." So the giant went off, and Jack was just going to jump out of the oven and run off when the woman said, "Wait till he's asleep. He always has a snooze after breakfast." Well, the giant had his breakfast, and then he said, "Wife, bring me the hen that lays the golden eggs." So she brought the giant an ordinary-looking hen, and the giant said, "Lay, and what do you know? It laid an egg made all of gold." Made all of gold was really something, but the giant grinned a horrible, toothy grin, and his head began to nod until a loud snore shook the house. Jack crept out of the oven on tiptoe and caught hold of the golden hen and was turning to leave when the hen gave a cackle that woke the giant. Jack was out of the house like a flash when he heard the giant calling, "Wife, wife, what have you done with my golden hen?" And the wife said, "What, my dear?" But that's all Jack heard, for he rushed off to the beanstalk and climbed down like a house on fire. When he got home, he showed his mother the wonderful hen and said, "Lay." It laid a golden egg for Jack, just as it had for the giant. And even better, it laid a golden egg every time he said lay. For a little while, Jack and his mother were satisfied. Thanks to the hen's golden eggs, they had all they needed to live a comfortable life. But it wasn't very long before Jack began to wonder if he couldn't find something else up there in the sky. So one fine morning, he got up early and went to the beanstalk. And he climbed, and he climbed, and he climbed, and he climbed, till at last he reached the sky. But this time, he knew better than to go straight to the giant's house. When he got near it, he waited behind a bush till he saw the giant's wife come out with a pail to get some water. Then he crept into the house and got into a big copper pot near the stove in the kitchen. He hadn't been there long when he heard... And as before, and in came the giant and his wife. "Fee, fi, fo, fum. I smell the blood of an Englishman," cried out the giant. I smell him, wife. I smell him." "Do you, my dearie?" says the giant's wife. If that's that little brat that stole the hen that laid the golden eggs, he's sure to have gotten to the oven. And they both rushed to the oven, but Jack wasn't there, luckily. And the giant's wife said, "There you are again with your fee-fi-fo-fum. Why, of course it's the boy you caught last night that I've broiled for your breakfast. How forgetful I am, and how careless you are not to tell the difference between a live one and a broiled one." The giant sat down to the breakfast and ate it, but every now and then he would mutter, "Well, I could have sworn." He'd get up and search the kitchen and the cupboards and everything, only luckily he didn't think of the copper pot. After breakfast was over, the giant called out, "Wife, wife, bring me my golden harp." So she brought it and put it on the table before him. Then he said, "Sing," and the golden harp sang most beautifully. And it went on singing till the giant fell asleep, and he began to snore like thunder. And Jack lifted up the copper lid very quietly, and got down like a mouse, and crept on hands and knees until he got to the table. He stood up and caught hold of the golden harp, and dashed with it towards the door. But the harp called out quite loudly, "Master! Master!" And the giant woke up just in time to see Jack running off with his harp. Jack ran as fast as he could, and the giant came rushing after. When Jack got to the beanstalk, the giant was not more than 20 feet away. Jack began climbing down. Well, the giant didn't like trusting his giant weight to the beanstalk, and so he stopped. But just then, the harp cried out, "Master! Master!" And the giant swung himself down to the beanstalk after his harp. Down climbs Jack, and after him climbed the giant. Jack climbed down and climbed down and climbed down till he was very nearly home. So he called out, "Mother, mother, bring me an axe, bring me an axe." And his mother came rushing with the axe in her hand. She caught sight of the giant coming down just below the clouds. Jack got hold of the axe and gave a chop at the beanstalk, which cut it nearly in half. The giant felt the beanstalk shake, so he stopped to see what was the matter. Then Jack gave another chop with the axe. The beanstalk was cut in two and began to topple over. The giant fell down and broke his crown, and the beanstalk came toppling after. Then Jack showed his mother his golden harp. She was delighted. Jack and his mother became very rich, and he married a great princess, and they lived happily ever after. That was Jack and the Beanstalk. While I queue up the next story, I'll have some water and you'll listen to some fire, of course. This one's going to be a little bit shorter. It's by Mark Twain. It's called About Barbers. Coming soon. Is About Barbers by Mark Twain. Actually, no, it's not. I actually forgot to drink water. I was just looking at some things on my computer. That was very silly of me. Okay. About Barbers by Mark Twain. All things change except barbers, the way of barbers, and the surroundings of barbers. These never change. What one experiences in a barber's shop the first time he enters one is what he always experiences in barber shops afterward till the end of his days. I got shaved this morning as usual. A man approached the door from Jones Street as I approached it from Main, a thing that always happens. I hurried up, but it was of no use. He entered the door one little step ahead of me, and I followed in on his heels and saw him take the only vacant chair, the one presided over by the best barber. It always happens so. I sat down, hoping that I might fall heir to the chair belonging to the better of the remaining two barbers, for he had already begun combing his man's hair, while his comrade was not quite yet done rubbing up and oiling his customer's locks. I watched the probabilities with strong interest. When I saw that number two was gaining on number one, my interest grew to solicitude. When number one stopped a moment to make change on a bath ticket from a newcomer and lost ground in the race, my solicitude rose to anxiety. Number one caught up again, and both he and his comrade were pulling the towels away and brushing the powder from their customer's cheek, and it was about an even thing which one would say, next, first, my very breath stood still with the suspense. But when, at the culminating moment, number one stopped to pass a comb a couple times through his customer's eyebrows, I saw that he had lost the race by a single instant, and I rose indignant and quitted the shop to keep from falling into the hands of number two. For I have none of that enviable firmness that enables a man to look calmly into the eyes of a waiting barber and tell him he will wait for his fellow barber's chair. I stayed out 15 minutes, and then went back, hoping for better luck. Of course, all the chairs were occupied now, and four men sat waiting, silent, unsociable, distraught, and looking bored, as men always do who are waiting their turn in a barber's shop. I sat down in one of the iron-armed compartments of an old sofa and put in the time while reading the framed advertisements of all sorts of quack nostrums for dyeing and coloring the hair. Then I read the greasy names on the private bayroom bottles, read the names and noted the numbers on the private shaving cups in the pigeonholes, studied the stained and damaged cheap prints on the walls of battles, early presidents, and voluptuous recumbent sultanas, and the tiresome and everlasting young girl putting her grandfather's spectacles on, execrated in my heart the cheerful canary and the distracting parrot that few barber's shop are without. Finally, I searched out the least dilapidated of last year's illustrated papers that littered the foul center table, and conned their unjustifiable misrepresentations of old, forgotten events. At last my turn came. A voice said, "Next?" And I surrendered to number two, of course. It always happens so. I said meekly that I was in a hurry, and it affected him as strongly as if he had never heard it. He shoved up my head and put a napkin under it. He plowed his fingers into my collar and fixed a towel there. He explored my hair with his claws and suggested that it needed trimming. I said I did not want it trimmed. He explored again and said it was pretty long for the present style, better have a little taken off. Needed it behind, especially. Said that I had it cut only a week before. He yearned over it reflectively a moment, then asked with a disparaging manner, "Who cut it?" I came back on him promptly with a, "You did." I had him there, and he fell to stirring up his lather and regarding himself in the glass, stopping now and then to get close and examine his chin critically or inspect a pimple. Then he lathered one side of my face thoroughly, and was about to lather the other, when a dog fight attracted his attention. He ran to the window and stayed and saw it out, losing 2 shillings on the result in bets with the other barbers, thing which gave me great satisfaction. He finished lathering, and then began to rub in the suds with his hand. He now began to sharpen his razor on an old suspender, and was delayed a good deal on account of a controversy about a cheap masquerade ball he had figured at the night before, and a red cambric and bogus ermine as some kind of a king. He was so gratified with being chaffed about some damsel whom he had smitten with his charms that he used every means to continue the controversy by pretending to be annoyed at the chaffings of his fellows. This matter begot more surveyings of himself in the glass, and he put down his razor and brushed his hair with elaborate care, plastering an inverted arch of it down on his forehead, accomplishing an accurate part behind, and brushing the 2 wings forward over his ears with nice exactness. In the meantime, the lather was drying on my face and apparently eating into my vitals. Now he began to shave, digging his fingers into my countenance to stretch the skin, and bundling and tumbling my head this way and that as convenience in shaving demanded. As long as he was on the tough sides of my face, I did not suffer. But when he began to rake and rip and tug at my chin, the tears came. He now made a handle of my nose to assist him shaving the corners of my upper lip. It was by this bit of circumstantial evidence that I discovered that a part of his duties in the shop was to clean the kerosene lamps. I'd often wondered in an indolent way whether the barbers did that or whether it was the boss. About this time, I was amusing myself trying to guess where he would be most likely to cut me this time, but he got ahead of me and sliced me on the end of the chin before I had got my mind up, He immediately sharpened his razor. He might have done it before. I do not like a close shave. I will not let him go over a second time. I tried to get him to put up his razor, dreading that he would make for the side of my chin, my pet tender spot, a place which a razor cannot touch twice without making trouble. But he said he only wanted to just smooth off one little roughness. And in the same moment, he slipped his razor along the forbidden ground. And the dreaded pimple signs of a close shave rose up smarting and answered the call. Now he soaked his towel in bay rum and slapped it all over my face nastily. Slapped it over as a human being ever yet washed his face in that way. Then he dried it by slapping with the dry part of the towel, as if a human being ever dried his face in such a fashion. But a barber seldom rubs you like a Christian. He poked bay rum into the cut place of this towel, then choked the wound with powdered starch, and soaked it with bay rum again, and would have gone soaking and powdering it forevermore, no doubt, if I had not rebelled and begged off. Powdered my whole face now, straightened me up, began to plow my hair thoughtfully with his hands. He suggested a shampoo, and said my hair needed it badly, very badly. I observed that I shampooed it myself very thoroughly in the bath yesterday. I had him again. He next recommended some of Smith's Hair Glorifier, and offered to sell me the bottle. I declined. He praised the new perfume, Joan's Delight of the Toilet, and promised to sell me some of that, or proposed to sell me some of that. I declined again. He tendered me a toothwash atrocity of his own invention, and when I declined, offered to trade knives with me. He returned to business after the miscarriage of this last enterprise, sprinkled me all over, legs and all, greased my hair in defiance of my protest against it, rubbed and scrubbed a good deal of it out by the roots, and combed and brushed the rest, parting it behind, and plastering the eternal inverted arch of hair down on my forehead, and then, while combing my scant eyebrows and defiling them with pomade, strung out an account of the achievements of a 6-ounce black and tan terrier of his, until I heard the whistles blow for noon, and I knew I was 5 minutes too late for the train. Then he snatched away the towel, brushed it lightly about my face, passed his comb through my eyebrows once more, and gaily sang out, "Next?" This barber fell down and died of apoplexy 2 hours later. I am waiting over a day for my revenge. I am going to attend his funeral. It was a little abrupt of an ending by Mark Twain. That was about barbers. We'll have maybe some of Aesop's fables for the last 5 minutes, but let's see which ones we want to read. Give me a second. With Aesop's Fables, this is The Lion and the Mouse. Once, when a lion was asleep, a little mouse began running up and down upon him. This soon wakened the lion, who placed his huge paw upon him, and opened his big jaws to swallow him. "Pardon, O King," cried the little mouse. Forgive me this time, I shall never forget it. Who knows but what I may be able to do you a turn some of these days." The lion was so tickled at the idea of the mouse being able to help him that he lifted up his paw and let him go. Some time after, the lion was caught in a trap, and the hunters who desired to carry him alive to the king tied him to a tree while they went in search of a wagon to carry him on. Just then the little mouse happened to pass by, and seeing the sad plight in which the lion was, went up to him and soon gnawed away the ropes that bound the king of the beasts. "Was I not right?" said the little mouse. "Little friends may prove great friends." That was The Lion and the Mouse from Aesop's Fables. I heard from somebody that you wanted to hear more Aesop's Fables, but that could be wrong. This is The Swallow and the Other Birds. It happened that a countryman was sowing some hemp seeds in a field where a swallow and some other birds were hopping about picking up their food. "Beware of that man," quoth the swallow. "Why, what is he doing?" said the others. "That is hemp seed he is sowing. Be careful to pick up every one of the seeds, or else you will repent it." The birds paid no heed to the swallow's words, and by the hemp grew up and was made into cord, and of the cords nets were made, and many a bird that had despised the swallow's advice was caught in nets made out of that very hemp. "What did I tell you?" said the swallow. "Destroy the seed of evil, or it will grow up to your ruin." That was The Swallow and the Other Birds. Seems to I've heard again that it's not yet midnight and you're not yet asleep, and so I guess I'll try and read you another one. This is The Hares and the Frogs. The hares were so persecuted by the other beasts they did not know where to go. As soon as they saw a single animal approach them, off they used to run. One day they saw a troop of wild horses stampeding about, and in quite a panic all the hares scuttled off to a lake hard by, determined to drown themselves rather than live in such a continual state of fear. But just as they got near the bank of the lake, a troop of frogs, frightened in their turn by the approach of the hares, scuttled off and jumped into the water. "Truly," said one of the hares, "things are not so bad as they seem. There is always someone worse off than yourself." And who's more worse off than me, who is ending my show? Up next, we have Spiritual Music with Bruce Springsteen at 666. You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 megahertz FM. And you want the mic, or do you want to just play some music? Of course you'll take the mic.
Wow. Hey, guys. This is WRCT Pittsburgh. Hopefully you enjoyed those fables, but now it's time to actually stay in bed and relax, get comfortable for the upcoming spring break. My name is Bruce Springsteen, 666, and this is Spiritual Music, a show that plays all kinds of electronic music at the midnight hour on Fridays. Last week, I took you to a rave in Trance, my future club, but little did you know that there's a secret second room too, where ambient and down-tempo tracks are played. And tonight, I'm taking you there. As always, I'll be naming track titles and artists, but if you miss it, they'll be available on WRCT.org. First track of the night is In Mind by Slow Dive. Yes, the Slow Dive. Let's relax.
We'll be right back.
not great. Next up, we got Single Gun Theory with Fall.